You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
OZM, we are all family. OZM, we're all the same. OZM, the fires of freedom.
Today's show intro was OCM by Susan Aglukark. Unceded Airwaves broadcasts every week from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Dringweezy, Autumn Chanel Vilji, Chief Jim Cooey, Janet Cooey, Jacqueline Cooey, Vivian Cooey, Shadeji. I am Treaty 11 Gwich'in and Inuvialuit on my mother's side, and I was born and raised in Treaty 6 territory of the Cree, Métis, Nakota Sioux, and Soto peoples. I was lucky enough to live there for the first 17 years of my life, and now I am living here as an uninvited guest on unceded Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh lands, and I'm really grateful to be here. I've been here for my first year, as I just said, And it feels really good to be here. I've never been on unceded land before in my life, so that's a really interesting topic and standpoint to come from, I would say. But yeah, do you want to introduce yourself, Mel?
Yeah, for sure. I'm Melissa Haberl. I am a settler of German and Austrian descent. I grew up in Epiquette, also known as Prince Edward Island, which is a traditional and ancestral homeland of the Mi'kmaq peoples. And I've been living here on unceded Coast Salish territories for about 6 years in different locations in Vancouver. And I'm also very grateful to be here as a guest on Musqueam land.
Beautiful. Do you want to go, Ben?
Sure. My name's Ben. I'm Jewish and Korean and grew up mostly on the traditional territories of Shawnee people in what is now the United States. I've been here on unceded territories for about 3 years now as a settler and uninvited guest, and I am enjoying every minute of it.
Do you want to go, Maddie?
Yes. Tansay, Madison Singh, Sigasayan. My name's Madison. I'm Cree from the Mixu Cree First Nation on my mom's side. I am Punjabi on my dad's side. I am originally from Northern Alberta, Treaty 8 territory, but I've been here for about 2 years now, here in unceded lands, and I'm very grateful to be here as an uninvited guest.
Lovely. Do you want to introduce yourself? Yeah, Larry Grant?
I'm Larry Grant. Ayatluck is my Musqueam name, and I have lived here all of my life on the traditional ancestral unceded lands of the Hunt Kaminum, speaking Musqueam people, and lived in the village that has been occupied for 4,000 years or more. So that I'm from this land.
Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. So we want to thank our sponsors, Decolonizing Water and NORAD Electric. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 24 of Unceded Airwave. Today we'll be talking about the new Hunk Aminum street signs recently unveiled on the UBC campus. Hunk Aminum is the traditional language of the Musqueam people, whose territory the University of British Columbia sits on. The new signs are posted on 9 major streets on the west side of campus and supplement their English names. The initiative was led by the Musqueam Nation, and the signs are intended to honor the linguistic heritage that is important, our heritage of this territory, and to create a more bilingual experience on campus.
We are very excited to have Musqueam Elder Larry Grant here with us today in the studio for an interview about the initiative. Larry is currently Elder in Residence at the First Nations House of Learning and a teacher in the First Nations and Endangered Languages program. He is a huge part of the relationship between UBC and the Musqueam community, and we are very grateful for all the work that he does on campus and for coming out to join us for this episode.
But before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day. So we are the Indigenous Radio Collective. Every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. We are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on the show and to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Unceded Airwaves is our opportunity to share and define the diversity of Indigenous cultures and to highlight some influential Indigenous people.
If you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out. You can reach us on our social media. We've got Facebook and Twitter. If you have a voice for decolonization, then we want to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome, and there is no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is every Wednesday at 1 p.m. at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. If you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate in this collective, too.
You can follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you're aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet using the hashtag UncededMusic or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get it on the air. And if we play a song you send us, we'll even give you a shout-out.
We're always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to, so let us know about any Indigenous artists you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show.
So the first song that you're going to hear is Manitou by Zibawan, recommended by Mel. It's also a perfect study song. Next week, we're going to be doing a study playlist for all of us, the students in the house, so all of us, except for Elder Larry Grant. But
student of life.
Hey, it's great.
I was going to say, you should also check out the EP that this song is off of. Zibawan's an Anishinaabe electronic artist. He's in Toronto right now, and it's so beautiful. It's called Time Limits. Yeah. Check it out. It's so great.
Really recommend listening to it, and you're going to.
Thank you.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. The time is 2:18 p.m., and we're here with Elder Larry Grant. So, Larry, when and how did the initiative to add the Hunkaminam signs come about?
They spoke about it for, it must be two and a half years now.
Oh, really?
It was in discussion because we talked about that with the Musqueam UBC committee that we have, that we needed some more signage on campus. And they said, how about streets? Is there anything we can do with streets? And then when the NASA program came, the conference came, they wanted to have some kind of reference because it was North American Indigenous Studies conference, and then the talking got serious and they tried to do it with temporary signs.
Yeah.
But it just didn't work, and because everybody didn't realize the process that has there's a real series of steps to take to do anything on campus.
Yeah.
With the campus community planning process. So that's why it took so long. It seems very short, but it was over 2 years that we had started discussions on it.
Yeah. What were the temporary signs like?
They were cardboard and just stuck up anywhere. Yeah. Just so that the conference people had some sort of signage to see, and then there's some sort of indication that the university was involved in Indigenous programming and stuff like that.
So. Okay.
Could you share anything about the process of translating the English street names or how you went about finding the right fit for the Hunkaminam names?
Oh, well, our biggest question was, what are you talking about? What do you mean by changing signs, because we know how long a process and how convoluted a process is to take a name off a street and put another name on it.
Yeah.
And we ended up saying, okay, because Indigenous peoples do not have human reference names on inhuman objects. Mm-hmm. There are no buildings that are named as we have here. Certain buildings have names on them. Streets have names on human names on them. Mm-hmm. For our people, a street is a pathway. And then they said, "Well, can we do something like Main Mall, East Mall, West Mall, Lower Mall?" And we said, well, we do not have the cardinal directions that came in after colonization. So we can do like Main Mall is the center mall. Then we have the mall that's on one side of Main Mall and the other one that's on the other side. And then I think it's Lower Mall that has Stuyvetan or Stuyvet. And that's the most westward north-south street, mm-hmm. even though we don't have north-south, but it's in that configuration.
Yeah.
And it was called Stuyvet because that is where you can actually really, the prominent wind is the west wind, northwest wind is always blowing, and that's the one that we felt that you could really feel the wind on there. So that's why it was called Stuyvet.
Okay.
And then we don't have north-south, but we have to look towards the mountain or to look towards the beach or look away from the beach, look upwards and down upriver or downriver with the flow of water or against the flow of water. And those are the primary directions that we have in Indigenous languages. And I'm quite sure it's quite universal around the world. Prior to colonials learning that about the compass from China. So it's one of those things that it's an evolution thing that and but to represent Hunt Kaminum, how do you say, ways of knowing, it was decided that we could do that. But to change names, we didn't want to take any human names off of the streets. Mm-hmm. This is why those are the nine streets that we actually helped to add names to. And because we didn't know about who did what or why those names were there.
Yeah.
And then I know when I spoke about the signs, I had said that the street signs with names on them, they're linear monuments. Mm-hmm. And the buildings with names on them are vertical monuments to the people that they're named after. And we don't have that conception in our culture. Our culture is, we would talk about your successes or your failures. If you're a massive failure, that would be talked about.
Let's hope that one isn't talked about as much. But,
but more in a philosophical way,
yeah.
You know, like a more moralistic way.
Yeah.
That's the way a lot of our stories are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're so full of moral teachings that it's hard to not get into that mode.
Yeah.
When you talk about those stories.
Yeah. I have a question. Then why is was there a particular reason that the street names weren't named after like specific sites? I remember you were talking about one. You came into my FNIS class and you were talking about like a bucket one where there was like a bucket, and I think one of the houses.
Oh, Humlesum.
Yeah, Humlesum.
Well, in the village of Musqueam, all of our streets are named after different sites.
Yeah.
We have Yukulta, it's the Lakota, the Cape Munch people from Campbell River area. Humlesum is about a transformation site. Mm-hmm. And we also named one of the Totem Park residence is a Humlesum also.
Yeah.
And that is about it. Before everybody was okay in the sense that people were here, things were here, and many of us were not complete. Mm-hmm. So Chels, who was our recreator or transformer, was here, and then one day walking along the shore, came across this young man playing with the water and refusing to share it, and saying that I live here, this is my spring water, I can do what I want with it, if I don't want to share it, I won't share it.
Yeah.
So after a long argument and discussion with Chels, Chels finally transformed him into a rock. And then the little water bucket that he was playing with was also transformed into a rock. And in our language, it's called a schoiten. And in English translation, it's a chamber pot. And many people may not know what a chamber pot is, but that's when you don't have indoor plumbing and the weather's cold outside, you have a little pot inside that you can use for a toilet and empty it on a daily basis. And so that's what that is. So, and when we named the Totem Park residents that, we also tried to say that, and we did say, it's something that you have to understand that Humlesum story is about sharing resources and being respectful to other people. And this is what you do at the university. Mm-hmm. You transform Because you come in here and you think you're going to be one thing, and many times you swing off in another direction and become something else. But the real story is the sharing of resources. And the resources that are most prominent here at the university is the resource of information and knowledge, and you have to share that. Otherwise, you could be turned into a lump in a log or a rock and be a monument to be something that people can say, oh yeah, there she is. She wouldn't share resources and didn't want to learn anything from the moralistic stories that are in there. So you turn into something that is non-functional and of no real value other than to tell a moralistic story. So,
is there a reason that UBC didn't like choose village site names then? Like, if you do you do that on the Musqueam Nation land?
The names of?
The streets here.
Oh, no, it was...
Or did they want to do things like
they wanted
streets?
To work with the community.
Oh, okay.
Because of this, the Aboriginal Strategic Plan, the original one, and then the subsequent one, and the vision of UBC to work within the Truth and Reconciliation calls to action, and the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, to work together and bring forward something that represented Musqueam, the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people. And it's something that has happened very, very strongly since the Truth and Reconciliation recommendations to action were published. But Musqueam and UBC have had a working relationship for approximately 40 years. It really began when the Museum of Anthropology was first built here, when it moved the Museum of Vancouver from downtown to the UBC campus. And Musqueam began at that time to work closer with, try to create a relationship with the University of British Columbia. So that it's all a reflection of those 4 decades of working together, plus the, how do you say it, the boost it got from the Truth and Reconciliation recommendations to action it. And then it's a good thing, but it's a sad thing also, because it took a court with recommendations for the people of Canada and the University of British Columbia to actually recognize First Nations people.
So in the last couple of weeks, there's been here on campus with the new street signs being unveiled, but then also the opening of the Indian Residential School History and Dialogue Center. There's been a lot going on with the Indigenous community and reconciliation initiatives. What's it been like for you over the years, kind of what you're explaining just now about the changing relationship? What's it been like for you to be part of that and to sort of witness that also as UBC is, and that relationship has kind of changed?
It's been a good journey. It's been something that, and I have to start from going to high school and then graduating and knowing that I would not be able to get a position as a professional, even if I was able to come to the University of British Columbia, and we were not allowed as Indigenous peoples to attend the University of British Columbia unless we were enrolled in the School of Theology and did not take other courses beyond.
What? Really?
Really, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And then knowing some people that were Chinese that graduated with degrees and good marks in their degree program, but were not hired from their professions because the company would say, nice credentials, good job, but we don't hire Chinese. You know? So that's the other issues. And then when you work with that and you come to the University of British Columbia and become part of the teaching staff, knowing the history of the province and the history of Canada, where people of color were denied a lot of things. And that's something that I think they're just working on at the City of Vancouver, doing an apology like Santa Ono had done. And then knowing about the Indian Residential School, and my wife is a survivor of the Indian Residential School, suffers from what is called today post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. And it's something that many people, when they talk about, why do you want to bring up all this stuff? Why do you want to have the residential school stuff? Just forget about it and get over it. And yet, in all the different first responder programs, they're very, very concerned about post-traumatic stress disorder and trying to help alleviate that. And when we as First Nations House of Learning community here with the director, Link Kessler, found out about after the TRC decisions were made that they were, the University of Manitoba at Winnipeg was going to house all of the documents that they could regarding the Indian Residential School court cases and stories and records. Link Kessler, along with other members of the committee, struggled very hard and did a good job of presenting the argument that we need a Western connection here with the truth and reconciliation records and stories, and also to facilitate that this Western area of British Columbia, Alberta, and the Yukon territories, that the surviving members of the Indian Residential School had an easier place to get to than Winnipeg, and they struggled and worked very, very hard to bring that here. There's a huge population of Indigenous people in the City of Vancouver area, in Metro Vancouver, and even though there are the survivors like my wife who will not talk about anything in the Indian Residential School to anyone, there are many others that have spoken out and have descendants that may want to see it. But also it's something that offers the opportunity, because when they opened up that Residential School History and Dialogue Center, the sitting president, Santa Ono, issued an apology from the university indicating that the university stood by and allowed all of this to happen without any intervention to the Indian Residential School atrocities that were happening, or even the not allowing Indigenous students to come to the University of British Columbia. And that's really, really something that I think is an opportunity to be able to research all of those questions that arise from why did it happen? how did it happen? Mm-hmm. This is Canada. How did it happen here? Mm-hmm. You know, this is the question that I hear from new immigrants when you speak of these issues. And this is Canada. It couldn't happen. Would never happen here. Why are you guys talking about something like this? And it's all documented. Mm-hmm. Canada documented all of this. But it's never been spoken about. And it's never been something that we could actually move through together with. And it's really a huge thing that happened. It may seem like an innocuous thing that this thing, research building, history building, opened up. Mm-hmm. But by opening that up, there are so many stories and so many research questions that can come out of this. And how do we prevent things like this happening again in the world, not just Canada, but in the world, so that we move away from this colonial subjugation state of mind, mm-hmm. where we work with colonialists that are willing to subjugate people to create industrial slaves, in the sense of slaves to the dollar economy, rather than working more in an ecological way that's sustainable for all of the human beings in the world. So that's where I think it will lead to, and how important I think that building is.
So then how do you feel about Santa Ono's apology in terms of like what it means to you as an elder in residence, but also just what he said and your opinions on it?
Well, Santa Ono's apology was pretty encompassing. Mm-hmm. And I think it was very, very sincere.
Yeah.
Because when we were sitting there, I think the majority of the Board of Governors was sitting right behind us. And they were all standing there, sitting there listening to that. Mm-hmm. And I think the question that, or the statement that came out, was the very last speaker had said, "President Ono, I hope you live up to your words."
Yeah.
"And I'm quite sure that you will." You know, and to me that's it's an interesting statement and question, given that Santa Ono is of Japanese descent, mm-hmm. and he was part of the movement of the Second World War when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor in 1941. And Santa Ono grew up in the United States in the Middle States. And because his father was a professor here of mathematics, in my mind, this is why I consider Santa's remarks very, very sincere, mm-hmm. because he does come from a background where these things happened to his
people too.
His people too. So, yeah.
Huh. And then, do you see a connection between the new Hunkaminam signs and a larger narratives of reconciliation and that?
Well, I do. I really do, because Hunkaminam in our history, Hunkaminam is the dialect of Metro Vancouver. And given all of the things that have been coming forward with Truth and Reconciliation, the UNDRIP, and actually the question about help us recognize Section 35 of the Canadian Charter of Rights. And Section 35 talks about the rights of Indigenous peoples that existed prior to contact, and all of the privileges that were there, not actually privileges, but the acts that allowed all of those things to happen, in a, that it's really something to think about. And now I miss too many things were going through my head. Yeah. So,
What are some of your favorite new signs?
Oh, the favorite. My favorite sign, I think, is Shuyathastam. Shuyathastam. That's it's where they teach them.
Where they teach them?
Yeah. and that's University Boulevard.
That's really cute. Yeah.
That makes sense.
because it all harkens back and is indicative of all of the stories that we talk about. Because there were many little villages all around the perimeter, and the forest was a place. There were trails through the forest to connect these different communities, and there was always something here. We got our medicines, some of our food. We got the cedar trees and everything the cedar does for us, like creating conveyances and clothing, and then also a place of respite and rebuilding, where you can come into the forest as an individual. As many of us do, we will go to Hawaii and lock ourselves up in a room somewhere and not talk to anyone and reflect on your life.
Yeah.
And it's always a place of learning and teaching. So that's what this is. Yathis is how you talk to someone, to teach someone or tell someone. Mm-hmm. The T is Yathastam. The T is a transitive indicator, and the is a detransitivizer.
Oh,
because it's not something you actually do physically onto someone. It's you're moving something theoretically.
Okay.
That makes sense.
And the S is the nominalizer. And the labialized X is a locative. Mm-hmm. It tells you it's a place. So that's how that's constructed. Mm-hmm. Yath is the root. Syath is the noun. Yath is the verb. Mm-hmm. And Yathas is to tell him.
Okay.
It's cool.
Because the us is a third person subordinate subject.
Oh. I'm sort of laughing over here. I took a class with Larry, or two classes this year, and I can actually understand some of that linguistic jargon, which is pretty exciting.
I love how technical it's getting. It's just making me smile.
Yeah, Ben is our linguist in-house. Yeah.
But so, like, with that, because you're breaking down the words very beautifully, like, how would you describe the relationship between Hunkaminam and the territory and the Musqueam worldview in that sense, with all those little parts meaning these different things that maybe speakers or English speakers wouldn't think about in our languages? Like, how do you see that connecting?
Well, I think it, when we're trying to have a presence with the language of the land through signage, through some words, and I know once you learn, I'm quite sure about these students, that they've learned how to break it down. And I don't know if you're linguistic students or not, but if you're not a linguistic student, you've learned something that really, really shows that the indigenous languages, at least of Metro Vancouver, they're quite complex and can be quite sophisticated. That being that kind of a language, a polysynthetic language where they can have a root reduplication, multiple reduplications in a sense, because there's two ways of reduplicating, indicating pluralization, and it's like the word musqueam, which is anglicized to musqueam. Mm-hmm. And without going into the story of the two-headed serpent like that's up here at the pole, musqueam is about the musque plant that mm-hmm. used to grow here and may still grow here because we're not able to identify exactly what it is. Musque is the plant, and the XW, the labialized X, is a locative, and it means the place where the musque grows.
Aww.
So that's, to me, that's once a non-Hunkaminum speaking person begins to see that, the questions will arise if they're curious at all. How is it there's this little X or the at the end, and why is it that?
Mm-hmm.
And out of all of that comes a more clearer understanding of indigenous names and how they're used.
Cool. So we'll be posting an important resource online through our Unceded Airwaves site and social media pages for this episode that includes a map of the new street signs on campus, descriptions of the meanings in the names, and audio clips about how to pronounce the street names in Hunkaminum.
Special thanks to Vanessa Campbell at the Language and Culture Department at Musqueam for recording these clips. We strongly encourage all UBC students, staff, and visitors to check it out and take some time to tour the new signs on campus.
Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to our guest, Larry Grant, for talking to us about these UBC happenings. We would like to thank our sponsors, NORAD Electric and Decolonizing Water. The next show that you will hear is Cue It Up. My name is Autumn Schnell.
I'm Mel Habrill.
My name is Madison Singh.
I'm Ben Chung.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. The final song that we have for you is Stay With Me by Mob Bounce, so please enjoy.
Stay with me. Stay with me. Stay with me. always here to keep you out of my sight. You keep me awake so I can think about our life. The kids make us want to be our best, stay there, right?
Sled Island Music and Arts Festival returns to Calgary from June 20th to 24th, 2018. Discover over 250 bands, comedy acts, film, and art in more than 35 venues across the city. This year's festival features guest curator Deerhoof, innovative indie rock act Dirty Projectors, electronic innovators Mount Kimby, versatile folk pop duo Way Oak, futuristic hip-hop titans Shabazz Palaces, outsider pop auteur John Mouse, and many more yet to be announced. Visit sledisland.com for details, travel deals, and to get your festival pass.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion.
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.